Hi there, this is Jeremy Swift. I play Leslie Higgins in Ted Lasso, and you're listening to the Follow Your Dreams podcast with Robert Miller.
Everyone has a dream. Robert Miller is a musician who had a dream to become a rock star. He followed his dream and he succeeded. If you're ready to pursue and succeed at your dream, then listen up and get inspired and motivated to take action today. Welcome to the Follow Your Dream podcast.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the award-winning Follow Your Dream podcast with listeners worldwide on every continent in 200 countries. I'm Robert Miller, your host. My guest today, and I'm excited about this, is entertainer Cy Young. He worked with, get this, Buster Keaton in Once Upon a Mattress, and he was in the road company of Pajama Game, dancing the number Steam Heat for a year. He's performed in New York at clubs and on Broadway. He's had 3 plays produced, 3 musicals produced, and listen to this, he had a song of his placed on a Barbara Streisand album. How about all of that? And in the middle, because he's had that song, we're going to play that song as part of the Songfest that I usually do only with my musician guests, but this is a special interview. And you know that I like to feature a song of mine underneath the introduction and at the end of every episode, and I try to make it relevant somehow to my guest. And in this instance, my featured song is my version of The In Crowd from the album PGS 7 by my band Project Grand Slam. I chose this song because Cy has definitely been a member of the entertainment in crowd for some time. So I thought that this worked. So Cy Young, welcome to the Follow Your Dream podcast, baby.
Robert, I am so thrilled to be on with you, and I am so inspired by your life because at 60, you turned everything around and became the great Robert Miller. Ha ha! How great is that?
Yeah, before that, I was not the great Robert Miller, but I like that. Okay. I'll add that into my name. Well, listen, you've had one heck of a career. All right, we got to start with the obvious here, which is, I mean, Buster Keaton. This is a guy that was a classic entertainer and made movies back in the day. How did you meet him? How did you get involved with him?
Okay, let me just tell you that when I got to New York, I was on, had been on Pajama Game for a year, dancing this Steam Heat number.
The Pajama Game is the game I'm in, and I'm proud to be in the Pajama Game. I love it. I can hardly wait to wake and get to work at 8. Nothing's quite the same as the Pajama Game.
All right, stop there. Stop there. How did you get into Pajama Game?
I got into Pajama Game because I was working in Chicago to begin with, and I studied in Chicago, and I got my first job in Chicago at the Empire Room of the Palmer House as a dancer. We actually went down to, we opened the hotel in Beverly Hills, the Beverly Hilton Hotel in 1959 as a dancer. I did that, and then I came back, and I worked at the Empire Room of the Palmer House as a dancer. The road company, A Pajama Game, came to Chicago in 1960. And there are 2 boys and a young lady who were the dancers in the Steam Heat. And one of the boys had left. And so they came to see me at the Empire Room. And they liked my work. And they said, come and audition for you. And so I auditioned. And I was really sharp at that time because I was studying all the time and rehearsing. And I got the job. And I got Pajama Game. And Bob Fosse, who created the whole thing, came to New York, to Chicago to see me. And he was really PO'd because he wanted to hire somebody from New York. And I was too good, he couldn't fire me. And I was very good. So I was on the show for a year. And then as soon as we got to New York, I did the the dance there at the City Center. We did the Steam Heat there. It was the first thing I did in New York. And then I got a job for about 3 years at a club called The Upstairs at the Downstairs. And that's where I met Barbara Streisand, Carol Burnett. Everybody was coming to see the show there.
All right, hold on a second. Let's go back to the steam heat for a second. Did you dance only that one number, or were you generally a dancer in Pajama Game?
I was the lead dancer in the show. We did the steam heat number, then there was a number with the picnic thing, but I wasn't in the chorus. I was never in the chorus. I was very good, but you know, I wasn't good enough to be a dancer in the chorus, and I never wanted to be a dancer in the chorus. I wanted to be unique and be an individual.
So you were the lead dancer. Now tell me, am I correct? Was Gwen Verdon in the film version of Pajama Game?
I believe she was. I believe she did that.
But who were the leads at the time that you were working with?
When I was in it, it was Fran Warren. But she was very famous at that time. I looked her up to be able to have some information about her. And she was very pretty, and she was very good. And the guy opposite her, I don't even know his name, Larry something, he wasn't very good. But she was excellent, and I got to know her. And she liked me, and I liked her. But we never had much to do with each other because she was the star of the show, and I was just a lead dancer.
I wouldn't call just a lead dancer. I mean, that's a very big part in any play. And Pajama Game is one of the great, you know, Broadway musicals for sure.
Yeah.
So congratulations to you that you were in it. Okay, so this came before Buster Keaton. Now go to Buster Keaton. Tell me about that.
Okay, so I was in New York. And I was very well known because everybody was coming to the upstairs and the downstairs club, nightclub, to see me perform, to see the show. And so I met everybody there, and I always was auditioning for all the big shows. So my agent said, you know, we've got this thing with On the Road with Buster Keaton, Dauntless the Drab, done by Joe Boba originally, and let's send you up for it. So I went up for it. I auditioned. At the end of it, I said, I just love this show. I love to do this part. And they were all kind of cheery and everything. And I walked away and I knew I had the job. It was great. And I got a call right away and went down there and we started rehearsing. And let me give you an interesting thing about me and Dodie Goodman.
Okay.
Myself and Dodie Goodman. Dodie Goodman was a performer.
Right.
But she wasn't a very good musical performer because her voice was not a trained voice. You couldn't sing very well. So every show in New York that went out on the road, before they went out, they did a free performance for all the performers and all the shows on the stage in New York. And so we were doing this show, and we had a scene where I was downstage right, and Jody was downstage left, and there were all people in the middle there. And I had this cross. I had to cross upstage over to her, and as I did it very slowly, I was thinking, and I'm a comedian, and people started laughing at what I was thinking as I did the cross, and I got over to her, and she was very, very upset because I was taking away from her laughs. And she never did like me very much because I was too good. But anyway, that did happen from time to time.
All right. But again, I want to just focus for a second on Buster Keaton because this one knocked my socks off, okay? This must have been towards the end of his career. I mean, the guy was famous, if I remember correctly, like around 1920 or so, 1930. So tell me what it was like to work with the guy.
Buster was, I would say he's the sweetest, dearest guy, performer I've ever known. And he was the greatest stuntman ever, ever performing stunts. Did you ever look at his stunts?
Well, I've seen some of the silent movies that he did.
Well, you go and look online and look up for Buster Keaton stunts, and you will be amazed that he lived through those stunts. It was just amazing the way he did it. And he was just great. And I worked with him, I'd say, for about 8 months. And we had a wonderful relationship. And we had a wonderful song at the end of the show whereby he pantomimes the birds and the bees to me. And it was so sweet. I would almost cry at the end of every performance because he was such a dear guy. And Eleanor, his wife, was very sweet also. But Buster was very generous. I mean, a lot of performers, I've had worked with performers where they're just very, like Dodie, like she would be looking, she'd be on stage with her and she'd be looking around and seeing where I was. Buster never did that. Buster was always very gracious and he was, you know, take the lead if you want. And I never had a problem with him, but he was very, very sweet. Would you like to know a little bit about his history, the beginning?
Sure. And also, wasn't he kind of a contemporary of Charlie Chaplin? Didn't they operate in the same basic era?
Yeah, he did. In fact, I've got a little thing about him. In fact, he told me once that he went to see Chaplin. Now, this was in the 60s when Buster was in the show. Mattress was 1961. And Buster was in had been in New York, been doing commercials, making scads of money making commercials on TV. And he was very, very famous for TV. So I'd say about the middle of the 60s, he went out to VV, Switzerland, to see Chaplin. So they had this long, you know, conversation of talking about everything. And Chaplin was talking about this and that and how great this was and that was. And Buster, of course, never said very much. And then at the end of the thing, Chaplin said, "Well, Buster, what have you been doing lately?" And Chaplin was always saying how he hated television. He just couldn't stand American television. So he said, "And Buster, what have you been doing lately?" And Buster said, "Television." Chaplin dropped his chin. But anyway, he was a very sweet guy. And when I found out about what he did, it was really amazing. He was the greatest stuntman of all time.
Let me stop you there for a second, because I didn't know that he did his own stunts. I guess this was before stunt doubles and stunt men came into being. Am I right?
No, people couldn't do what he did. A stuntman couldn't have done it and survived. He broke his neck, and he didn't really even know about it until a year later. A doctor said, "Hey, Buster, when did you break your neck?" He said, "What? I don't know." And the reason he didn't break his neck, Robert, was because when he was a kid, 3 and 4 years old in vaudeville, here was the act. It was the three Keatons. The mother, Myra, would stand stage left and play the saxophone. And Buster and his dad would be center stage doing the act. And here was the act. Little Buster, three or four or five years old, would get his dad very angry. He would purposely get his dad angry. So his dad would pick him up and throw him at the scenery, or throw him into the orchestra pit, or throw him into the audience. And every town they went to, the women would come and say, "This is child molestation. This is horrible. This is child abuse." And the cops would come and they would examine Buster. Not a scratch on him, not a bruise on him, no broken bones. And later on, he said, "The way I did it was something by called proper technical execution." He said, "What it was," he said, "I would be very limp when I would hit anything. I would just limp my body, and I would have a hand or a foot that would break the fall." And he said, "A couple of times I would have been killed if I hadn't done that." In fact, they did that so much, so often, his mother sewed a handle into his clothes so his dad could go to the handle, pick him up, and throw him against something. And he did that, and the act was very, very successful. But it was interesting that he learned how to fall that way. And the way he got his... One is deadpan. Houdini, the great magician, was there on the circuit with him, and for some reason he called Buster, and he said something about his face, and so Buster never smiled after that. It was really great.
Really, what great stories! Wow, I mean, the fact that you cover an era that, you know, so many people don't even remember at this point, but I find it fascinating. Hi, everybody. This is Robert Miller, your host. As a musician and composer, I've crossed multiple genres. My early work includes jazz rock instrumentals like Spring Dance. And ballads like Ma Petite Fleur. Later on, I segued into vocal songs like Redemption Road.
But I'll come back strong, trying to stay on Redemption Road. I try to rise, make you surprise, Redemption Road.
And along the way, I added collaborations with world-class musicians like Jim Peterik, Elliot Randall, and Tony Carey on The Fall of Winter.
He said, "Stand tall to yourself, be true. Don't let the fall of winter get the best of you."
I also pride myself on the reimagined covers I've done, including The In Crowd.
I'm in with the in crowd. I go where the in crowd goes. I'm in with the in crowd. And I know what the in crowd knows. Yeah, yeah.
And then recently, I've come full circle with The Rich Ones, a jazz instrumental with guest artist Randy Brecker. For me, crossing genres helps keep the music fresh. Once again, I want to thank you all for listening to this podcast, and keep on rocking. All right, I want to move forward. You mentioned Barbara Streisand.
Yeah.
Tell me about that. How did you meet her? And was this at the early point in her career, I assume?
Yeah, it was in the early 60s. As I said, I was at the upstairs at the downstairs club. Very chic guy named Julius Monk ran it. There was a show downstairs. I was always at the downstairs. There was a show upstairs. People like Nancy Dussault, George Firth, I worked with them. George Firth wrote Company. And so a lot of people came to see me. Barbara Streisand came with, who's the big tall guy she was married to at that time?
Elliot Gould.
Elliot Gould. And so they came to see me several times. She sat down, just off left. And of course, also Carol Burnett came to see me. Carol, this is an interesting story about Carol Burnett and what a ding dong I am. Carol Burnett came up after a performance. She said, "Cy, I liked everything you did. Here's my phone number." I took her phone number, and guess what? I never called her. Don't ask me why. But anyway, so then I met Carol, and that's how I met Streisand. And so I had just done a show. Let me just give you a little generic thing of this. I had just done a show that was opening off Broadway. I'd finished the score. There were 12 songs, and I was very keyed up. I was very spiritually, I was excited, and I was inspired. And so I sat down at the piano, and I started playing a little phrase, ba 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 ba, and the song came out. In 5 minutes, I had Draw Me a Circle. It would shoo. Of course, you know, any real writer who knows this stuff does not take credit, because ideas come down to us from the great beyond. And anyway, and so about a month later, I had a friend who said, "Hey, Cy, Streisand's going to be in town tomorrow, and she's looking for writers for songs." And she said, "You want to come?" I said, "Sure." So I went to this place, and there were like a little rehearsal studio. They had them all over New York, and about 12 writers. We were all sitting there, and Barbara was sitting there, and she was very nice. And she had each writer do the song, and I came to me, and I did a couple songs, and I did Draw Me a Circle. I finished it. She said, "I love that song." She said, "I'm going to have Marty Ehrlichman, her manager, contact you and sign it, because I'd like to use the song." Well, 3 months later, I hadn't heard from Marty. And that was his big mistake, because in the meantime, I had a friend, Moose Charlotte, who was very, very well-known writer, who had a wife, Sandy Stewart, who was a singer also. And she said, "Well, I want to record that too." And I let her do it, which was a big mistake, because Barbara was going to do it as a release as a single. She wouldn't release it as a single because it had been done. But she did put it on her album, and she did use it to open whatever television series.
All right. That's a fascinating story. And it's a great segue to the Songfest portion of this interview, because right now, underneath my voice, I am playing Barbara Streisand singing Draw Me a Circle.
Curving line. hair, add some hair.
So I want to hear from you. It must have been unbelievably exciting for you to have that song on a Barbra Streisand album. Am I right?
It was thrilling, and I would like to have a song on all her albums, but it didn't work out that way. I was busy writing other kinds of shows. But yeah, it was really great. And I have to say, her voice, it was just so incredible. It still is, evidently. I contacted Marty a couple of months ago. And I said, Marty, I've got a song for Barbra. She's still singing? He said, yes. And so I said, okay, I've got, and this is the song. And I sent it to them. I didn't hear anything. But she is still singing. And she's 80.
Yeah, she's a remarkable artist with a remarkable voice. And kudos to you that you got a song on one of her albums. All right, I have to play from Pajama Game, Steam Heat.
Heat I got. Steam heat I got. Steam heat. But it can't get warm without your head to hold. The radiator's hissing, still I need your kissing to keep me from freezing each night. I got a hot water bottle, but nothing I got will take the place of you holding me tight. I got steam heat, I got.
It's one of the great songs from the Broadway, you know, canon.
We had to sing that and dance at the same time.
So you had to sing it and dance it?
Sing and dance at the same time.
It's a great song. And, you know, it was maybe the key song in the entire show. Am I right?
I think it was very strong. I think it was one of the strongest songs. Da-da, da-da-da, da-da-da-da. But it was also pretty well known.
Yeah, well, it was a great show. It went on Broadway forever. That was the heyday of Broadway. You know, the 1950s, the 1960s, when people used to dress up in suits and women would wear dresses to go see a Broadway show.
That's right, they did.
It was a special event, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was great. It was terrific. And I still do that, Robert. I get to a theater and it kind of permeates me, and I just get so excited and so thrilled. I would like to be working in the theater all my life. In fact, I left the theater for a few years. I shouldn't have, because I was a very good performer. But you know who Fred Ebb was?
Of course.
Fred Ebb wrote Chicago.
And all that jazz. Come on, babe, we're going to brush the sky. I bet you lucky Len, they never flew so high. Cause in the stratosphere, how could he lend an ear to all that jazz?
And I'm leaving
today. I want to be a part of it. New York, New York, these vagabond shoes.
He wrote that too, the lyrics to that.
Kander and Ebb, they were the team.
Kander and Ebb, that's right. I knew him when he was Paul Klein and Ebb, Klein and Ebb. Anyway. But anyway, Fred once said to me, Cy, you don't know how good you are as a performer. And that's true, I never did. Because had I known, I would have taken advantage of a lot of things. And I'd have been a movie star, among other things.
Well, listen, you've done so many things in your life, and you'll be congratulated. And I love all the stories that you've been telling. We have been talking here with the great Cy Young, a wonderful entertainer who goes back and covers the Broadway era and so many others. Cy, I want to thank you so much for being on this podcast. It's been such a gas to have you on.
Okay, thanks, Rob. Boy, it went fast.
It certainly always does. We're going to listen now to that song of mine that started off the episode. It's my version of that great hit by Dobie Gray called The In Crowd. I want to thank you all for listening, and we will see you in the next episode.
Thanks for listening to the Follow Your Dream podcast. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast so you don't miss another inspiring episode. You can connect with Robert at robert@followyourdreampodcast.com. And you can hear more from his band at projectgrandslam.com.